You're listening to Paranormal Portal on Revolver Podcasts. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, and I do apologize, we kind of ran into the break on that one, but we usually get bumper music into our feed, and we can if we're not watching the clock, we can at least hear when the break's coming, but nothing came up for us, so we do apologize, and the conversation has just been amazing, and I wanted to make sure to point out that Linda Godfrey, of course, who's joining us tonight, also has a book out there, and I hope you guys will check it out. It's called Monsters Among Us, and let me pull up the panel here so you guys can see it, and you can learn a little bit more about it on her blog, but it's got several different cryptids and phenomena that's covered in this book, and you can find it at Barnes & Noble and on Amazon, so definitely check it out, ladies and gentlemen, and all of her other myriad of books as well. She's quite an accomplished author, and as you Linda, you're covering so much ground and such amazing topics. I really like that. I think that's phenomenal because, of course, the Beast of Bray Road, I mean, that and your name is synonymous. That's just known everywhere. But I love that you're covering these other phenomena as well. And it reminds me of one of the first books that I ever read that really got me launched into the paranormal as a child, and that was Charles Berlitz. His books of the mysteries of the unexplained and stuff. And I think that's awesome.
Well, thank you. Yeah. And I like to think that I sort of follow in the tradition of John Keel, you know, who's best known for the Mothman and the Mothman prophecies, that right. sort of thing. And yet many people don't know that he actually was also studying UFOs in that same area when that occurred, and that he had well over 100 cases of UFOs and other things, the Men in Black phenomena. And I've often said, he's the one who came up with this idea that there are windows where worlds interact and the windows open and all these things come out. And I've observed that myself, where there is a cluster of one strange type of creature, you're often going to find a whole range of weird creatures and phenomena. Mm-hmm. And to me, it's to say I'm only going to pick one and study that. Mm-hmm. When you've got the opportunity, if you're one place and there are lots of weird things that you can choose to study, some of the other creatures or phenomena that are around there, why wouldn't you? Sure. How do you know that there isn't a connection between them? And I think it's behooves us to at least consider that and look and make sure we're not missing something that's sitting right in front of our faces. But I always say it's like the old potato chip commercials. No one can eat just one, and no one can really study just one.
Sure, sure. I would agree with you. I think that in some respects, you know, the paranormal researchers are becoming akin to, you know, doctors. Back in the day, there was just doctors. And now, you know, now, of course, there's specialists. And there are those that choose to specialize and devote all of their time and energy into it. But personally, I like your approach where you cover more than one thing, because it's also interesting. And you're right. I really think that that's profound, in that one thing may be very well indicative of another thing. And to ignore other approaches and other phenomena that may be happening in the same area, you're right, would be like, you know, I mean, it couldn't truly be research at that point, right? Because you'd be ignoring some other causalities and possible probabilities or possibilities anyway.
Right. I've written this several times that, you know, if you're doing that, you're really not investigating. You're just following your own biases and trying to prove your own biases. And that's not, that's just not investigation. It's research even, really. It's just looking to prove your own opinions.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. And now, just as we ran into break, you were talking about your grandson having seen one. And I just think that that's incredibly powerful, because you know his mind doesn't have any bias in it. It's just an observed phenomenon in its purest form, probably, yeah?
Yeah, and it was such an odd moment. It wasn't like we'd been sitting around a campfire talking about Bigfoot or anything. It was just a normal day. I was taking care of him. Nobody else was in our house, and we had been somewhere, and I think I picked him up from school or something. So, you know, his mind was normally on cookies and milk at that point. We came into the house, and I stopped to grab his jacket and hang it up. He went running into the living room, which had a big picture window that overlooked our yard which was edged, as I said, in these kettles. Mm-hmm. And I heard him gasp really loudly. And this is a very laid-back kid. He doesn't show excitement a lot. And so I was kind of concerned. I said, "What? What is it?" And he said, "Grandma, I think I just saw Bigfoot." And I'm, you know, I'm like, "What?" But he was really concerned about it.
Mm.
So, you know, he told me, and I video recorded his telling of it a second time, just to make sure I had it very fresh to the source. But I said, "Well, what did its head look like?" And now, if he was trying to make something up, I think he would have had, you know, something to say about, "Oh, it had big eyes, it was staring at me and had fangs." And he said, "Well," he said, "I didn't really get the best look at its head because it was going so fast, it was just like a blur."
Wow.
And I said, "Really?" And I said, "Well, what else did you see?" And he said, "Well," he said, "it didn't have any neck." He said, "There was just the head and the body, and there wasn't any neck." And, of course, that's a standard Bigfoot thing, right? You know, and he said he was covered in dark fur, and he didn't turn and look at my grandson or anything. He just kept going. And that was, and he said, my friend's daughter had used the term striding. My grandson used the term speed walking.
Oh, okay.
That's something he knew about from school and gym class. They had tried speed walk. He said it was like speed walking. And he, you know, imitated that, you know, where your head is not bobbing up and down, your legs are just moving. So I'm like, wow, you know,
right.
It was just almost too much. It was kind of scary to think that it would be that close, because it was only a few feet from the house itself. I mean, it was very up close. And I did find an imprint. I went outside as soon as I could and looked at the corner of the house where it would have gone. And I was figuring that it probably would have either then run across the road and dived into this big kettle, or it could have gone to that neighbor that saw one and kind of shinnied down his yard and down into that kettle. So it was trying to get one place or the other. I couldn't know. But there was a big print. It wasn't deep enough to cast. I took a couple of photos of it. But that actually creeped me out. That was like too close to home. And
right.
My grandbaby, you don't mess with my grandbaby.
Sure. Right. Yeah. Of course, you know, I guess many people have heard the stories of, you know, the missing 411, David Politis's work. And,
oh, I didn't even say it.
Yeah. You know what I mean? I do know exactly what you're talking about. And you know, we of course live in the Pacific Northwest over here, and those things always go into my mind when I'm, you know, out with my wife and little one mushroom hunting. It's just like, you know, I'm really always cognizant of the fact that, you know, anything could happen at any time. And so, yeah, but I live in town, of course, so I don't have to worry about that many odd things walking by the house. However, we did have a moose in the neighbor's yard once just this last fall. So that was pretty interesting. But what would you
I want to say that saves you, though, honestly, really. They're much more they're much bolder, both the dogman and the Bigfoot, if recent sightings are to be believed. You know, they're coming into towns, outskirts of towns, and I mean, coyotes have been, there's a huge PBS special on how coyotes have moved into urban areas and taking night cameras and showing them right up on people, walking around front porches you know, kind of swarming around houses. And if the coyotes can come in and find things, then other things might as well.
That's probably true. I guess I never really considered that, but you know, you're right, and I do believe that in many cases they can be opportunistic, and certainly they know that where there's people, there's edible trash probably, or gardens or whatever. Right. Yeah.
Apparently, wild plum trees too.
Wild plum trees. Yeah. Did you see mine? Sure. Mine got pulled down out there.
No, huh?
I mean, it was already split, so I think it was the weight of it. But I have a wild plum tree right outside my house. It got split from the snow load, and I think it's because the weight of the fruit as it's developing finally pulled it down to the ground. So I've got one of those. But I've, you know, it's a good point that just because you live in town is by no means a guarantee. Yeah. I was going to ask you in terms of your sightings, because I'm curious, you know, you hear the different reports from across the map of Bigfoot, and I would like to ask as far as dogmen too, but in terms of the Bigfoot that you've witnessed, what size would you say they are in terms of feet?
Well, the black one that I saw, I figured might be a juvenile, possibly because of the rounded sort of head, and I didn't think it wasn't 9 or 10 feet. It might have been 8.
Okay.
Maybe 7 to 8, something like that. Probably, and I would say probably closer to 7. Okay. The one that ran across the picture window, I asked my grandson how old how tall he thought it was, and he was thinking about it because he said it was kind of hunched over. And its legs were bent, you know, so he didn't feel that it was in full upright position. But he said it was taller than my dad, and his dad is about 5'8", I think, something like that. So anywhere between 6 and 8, and I'm not sure that was the same one I saw because he seemed to think it was more brown fur and that it was shaggier than what I saw. So there may have been a different one there too, but I'd say anywhere from 6.5 to maybe 7.5 at the tops.
Wow.
These.
Okay. Because, you know, you hear the stories. I mean, I've heard some reports even more recently, and these are height ranges that I didn't know were possible, but I've heard in the, you know, plus 10 feet range, like 12, 13, 14 feet.
Right.
And yeah. I've heard, and I think they're mostly, those heights are mostly out like where you are.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Well, you know, you've got all those big, great forests and
lots of food, lots of berries, everything. Yeah.
Yep. Exactly. And I think that they were sort of clustered in my own mind, just from reading, you know, I've formed these general impressions. It's by no means law, but in my own mind, it seems logical that if they started out there and then kind of made their way eastward, the less cover there was when they went somewhere.
Right.
You know, the shorter ones probably tended to survive better.
Oh, so, yeah, that's true.
Well, they got to go through the Great Plains there, yeah, where they cut out all the trees, you know, flatlands.
Yeah, so I mean, they might have gone up through Canada and then down again. I don't know. Huh. But it does seem that the large heights come predominantly from the West Coast area. Not always, but
right.
predominantly. And up into Canada, you know, I think where it gets real wild, in the wilds of Canada, I think that's where they seem to be bigger as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree. I was wondering now, in terms of the dogmen, what are the height ranges that are reported with those?
Yeah.
Well, those tend to vary. Generally, they're between 5.5 and 7 feet tall.
Okay.
Occasionally, there will be taller ones, and I've heard some people, you know, credit them with being like 10 feet tall or 11 feet tall, which is huge. And if you think about it, the very largest timber wolves,
mm-hmm.
gray wolves, are about, they can be up to 7 feet from the nose to where the tail would begin, mm-hmm. you know, just the body itself.
Mm-hmm.
And stand up to be a little over 7 feet tall if they're standing. But you get too much over that, you know, and you start really wondering if a canine can be that big. And I'm not sure, but there are some people who have reported it. But most of them fall in that 5.5 to 7 foot range.
Wow. And now, Don, you were going to ask...
Yeah, because you were talking about, well, Brent brought up the idea, you know, who would win in a cage fight, basically. But I was wondering, because, you know, we've talked to, like, Jim Bear King, you know, and he says that, you know, that in general, Bigfoots are, unless you really cross a line, they just kind of leave you alone for the most part. But,
right.
you know, my vision of that would be dogmen would seem more aggressive, and they would be more, because, you know, a canine can, you know, you look at a canine wrong sometimes and they just flip. Now, that's not always, because I'm a big pit bull lover. So, you know, I don't believe that's always true. But I've always heard that dogmen are very aggressive as compared to a Bigfoot. What's your take on that?
Well, yeah, I think in general, it may be just that they look more aggressive to us because they've got the big pointed fangs and the claws, you know, and maybe they're more embedded in our consciousness as looking like wolves, which are dangerous. So that might be one thing. It's the psychological aspect that we come equipped with when we're looking at them.
Right.
But it also, I think, could be that if going just by the reports that I've had over 26 some years, and I still get reports, you know, every week I get one or two or three from various things and usabilities. I don't even think that's a word. Must be getting late. I'm starting to make up words. But the thing is that with the dogmen or upright canines, they can look really vicious, but they seem to make this kind of show of bravado, snarling, maybe chasing the people for a little ways.
Right.
And then people will always say, it could have gotten me. I know it could have, you know, had me for lunch if it wanted. But then at the last second, it just broke off and ran into the trees or into the cornfield or into the brush or whatever is there for cover, because it's seldom just seen without any cover at all.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do think it seems in their case that they're more like some sort of making some sort of territorial display to get you out of their feeding grounds or breeding grounds or whatever they've got going on. Because, again, I've only had one reported injury that required doctor's attention in all these years myself. There are some other stories that I don't say yay or nay on because I haven't studied them myself. And I don't doubt that there could be some attacks, because they do obviously have the equipment,
right? Yeah,
to, you know, to hurt people if they wanted to, and with all the numbers of sightings, you know, it seemed bound to happen sooner or later. But the other thing is that we're primates, and we're not always keyed in to exactly read the expressions on a canine's face. For instance, my husband's family had this great old farm dog, just a mutt, and her name was Wendy. And Wendy just loved people, and she loved to smile at people. And I remember the first time I met Wendy, I thought, oh, no, this dog's going to, you know, have me for dinner, because they're a huge mouthful of these sharp teeth.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out she thought she was smiling. But to me, it looked like a horrendous death grimace.
Oh, goodness. Right. Yeah.
So, yeah. You know, and it's a totally a matter of my interpretation of her bearing all those teeth. Mm-hmm. So there may be some bit of that as well, you know, where if there's what we have is the problem in communication. Is that how the line goes? Something like that.
What we have here is a failure to communicate.
That's it. You got it. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
So it seems like the aggression that they show is more of just, you know, getting you off the land, you know, or out of their territory, as you said. So, you know, and that's good to know, because we know that Bigfoot will herd people out of their territory by throwing rocks and intimidating them through, you know, different grunts and things like that. So, you know, that's good to know that, you know, they at least give you a chance to make the right decision.
They seem to, you know, and again, I wouldn't risk it. Like, right. I wouldn't say, oh, well, so they're really good and I can just go up and get real close and take a picture and it's not going to hurt me. I still, you know, would say treat them with the same respect you would treat any predatory animal that you would run up against, because we don't really know for sure. Nobody can guarantee anything. If you're out in the woods or a state forest or state park, you're in the real world. Yeah, and if something's happening, you have to take care of yourself.
Right. Yeah. Now, do you think that that the dogman is operating in that same range of intelligence as what Bigfoots are alleged to work at?
I don't know if it's fair to compare the intelligence of a canine and a primate. I think they may be very intelligent, both of them, but in different ways, just because their bodies are different and they're developed differently, and you know, they're just different animals or creatures.
Right.
So I think they're both extremely intelligent, and many, many witnesses, dogman witnesses, have said to me, it locked eyes with me, and I felt that it was much more intelligent than your average animal. Of any kind, you know, and sometimes they'll feel that it's sending them a message, not in English so much, but just an impression, like it would get me if I told anyone, or it could jump on the hood of my car if it wanted, or, and again, these are just sort of let me scare you as badly as I can messages.
Right. Right.
So. And maybe you'll leave and get out of my dinner network here.
There you go.
So a lot of posturing, but with a definite end game in mind, and it could escalate if it doesn't go well.
I think that's fair to say. And when it comes to pets, I mean, the dog man, hands down, is really got quite a few incidents recorded where it's taken people's pets, you know, and carried them off, or broken them in half, or whatever. They're much less tolerant, and that's a general canine feature too. You know, they're not tolerant of being challenged by other animals on their own turf.
So because they resemble canines, I mean, would you agree that they probably are in a canid family, or in that family tree somehow? Or do you think that they're just something all different? But you know what I mean. It's just. Because of course,
I think there are different things that people might be seeing, and I don't use the word species because I don't think it's even that close. The great majority of sightings that I receive are what I call just the regular. If something that other people call a werewolf can be considered normal and regular, but this would be the one that's 5.5 to 7 feet tall, walking like a human, looks. Otherwise, for all the world, like an upright wolf or wolf-dog hybrid.
Okay.
You know, they don't really have human features. They're, I always say, if you found a dead one, you just think, oh, there's a kind of a weird-looking, huge, wolf. Dead canine. Mm-hmm. But then you hear these reports of others, and they seem to be more and more frequent, where people are saying, well, you know, it was maybe 7 or 8 feet tall. It had shoulders and muscles. Like a bodybuilder human, covered with shorter hair than usual. Usually it'll be short black hair, not always, sometimes shaggy, but had the head and the ears and the muzzle and the fangs and all that of a canine. And very often these types of incidents will turn up near military sites and near Native American land holdings. And some people link them to the skinwalkers or the shapeshifters that you know, kind of a whole nother, that's a whole nother story in itself, and is not, it would not involve a wolf or some kind of creature changing or adapting it. It's starting out with a human that is able to adapt or change or project somehow this image of a different type of canine. But that's a human to canine. The other one just seems to be a canine imitating humans. Mm-hmm. And there are other sort of types too. I mean, people will list as many as 7 types, 10 types, 12 types.
Wow.
And I think I don't think those are necessarily always types exactly. It's just sometimes you're observing different characteristics. Just like if you talked about, you know, we would never talk about types of humans.
Mm-hmm. Right. True.
You know, because you might find, you know, a Scandinavian person, a man who is like 7 feet tall, and everybody on the street is 7 feet tall and, mm-hmm. you know, with white hair. And then you might find somebody who's very short and has a different color hair. And we're all just humans. We're not types or different species of humans. We're humans. That's what we are.
That's very true. And we are going to go to our last break of the night already. Woo-hoo. It's gone that fast, ladies and gentlemen, but we will be back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the last half hour of our show. It's gone so incredibly fast.
Yes.
But such is the case whenever you have a good conversation and a phenomenal discussion. So,
you know, I just enjoy listening to these stories, whether it be, you know, the Bigfoot stories or, you know, Linda's stories about the dogmen, because the dogmen is something that we don't get to cover a whole lot, and hence the reason we love Linda.
And, of course, welcome back to the show, Linda.
Thank you. That is so sweet. I really appreciate that.
Well, it is phenomenal to have you on. And you know, your experiences aside, you're just such a pleasant person to talk to. Yes, it's just so easy to get involved in conversation with you. So thanks for making it easy.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I'll have to remember and tell my husband you said that. Next time he complains, I'm not easy to get along with.
Well, you know, there is something to be said for relationships.
I think that's a married person prerogative.
Yeah. And I'm joking. My husband's very, very supportive. If it weren't for him, I would not have been able to pursue this line of work the way that I have, you know. Yeah. So I give him major credit.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Behind every successful researcher is a very understanding spouse.
And a wage earner.
Yeah, yeah, well that helps too for sure. But I was gonna ask you of all of the stories that you've collected, are there any that stand out? Well, I'm sure there's many, many that stand out to you, but you know, we got a half hour left, and if you don't mind, I'd like to hear some of the more profound reports you've taken.
Okay, well, I actually had this out for some reason.
Oh, by all means.
It's a message that I got a couple of years ago, and for some reason it got stuck between two reports, which happens to me every once in a while, and I found it. And it hasn't been published, but I was so taken, especially since I told about my 7-year-old grandson, because he was younger when this happened. And you're just going to like the description here, because it's a very unique description of what he saw. And I'm still not exactly sure what it was. But he wrote, my name is, and then gives his name. I don't have his permission to use it, but
sure.
But his full name and stuff is on here, his contact info. He says, I know that you investigate the Dogman, a.k.a. Bray Road Beast. I just wanted to tell you about something I saw now twice that was weird for a lack of a better word. The first time was outside of Blanchardville in around 2007 or 2008. on North Lake Road between Blanchardville and Argyle. And that's kind of north of Madison, Wisconsin. Okay. Madison's our state capital. But it turns to a very rural area very quickly as you drive north from the city. And he said, I was coming home in the evening after work, and I saw something that I describe as looking like a monkey on roller skates.
Ah,
wow.
How's that for a description? That's the first time I ever heard that one. It was an animal about the size of a 7 to 8 year old kid in the road. It was black, and it ran like nothing I've ever seen. It had long arms and ran weird, kind of galloped along the road. I think he means he followed it along in his car. Uh-huh. I have to admit, I was trying to hit the dang thing because I knew nobody was going to believe me and because it scared me.
Yeah.
I had never had anybody admit that before. The thing was fast, real fast. If needed, I could take you to the place I saw it. I told my mom, I think he was a teenager when this happened. Uh-huh. I saw something weird and left it at that. A few days later, she saw it too in roughly the same area I had and described it the same way. I hadn't told her how it looked, just that I'd seen a weird animal in the road and that I had tried to run it down. I always felt scared when in the woods around there, like someone was watching me. And my brother told me the same thing. He didn't like going out to cut wood in the trees around there because he felt like he was being watched, and he always hurried to get enough wood and get out of there. And the second time he saw it was about 2 weeks ago, and this was August 2014. So August must be a good month around there. Outside of Beaver Dam, where I now live, Beaver Dam is a small town farther north yet than those other ones, kind of in mid-central, mm-hmm. Eastern to the eastern side. And he wrote, again, I was driving home from work at about 6:15 to 6:30 p.m., and I saw this thing in the woods standing there on the edge. This time I got a real good look. It was dark. Almost black, and it looked like a wolf, but it was standing upright like a man. It didn't have pointy ears, though its ears were kind of rounded like a bear, but this was no bear. And I've seen dogs with ears like that, too. I know exactly what he means. It was kind of droopy, slouchy, with its arms hanging way down by its knees, and it had a real small waist. So, wow. Which makes me think of Dogman rather than Bigfoot, because mm-hmm. they're not noted for small waists, but... he said, I could see its face real good, and I slammed on my brakes and looked at it, thinking it was a kid or someone put a Halloween decoration out by the woods. It moved. I drove forward then, backed up, because I thought, no way, I'm not seeing what I'm seeing. As I backed up, it leaned to the side to get a better look at me, and I could see its teeth, and it blinked its eyes. That's when I said, blank that, and I sped off home. I do not drink or do drugs. I saw what I saw. I wanted to go back and look for tracks, but it rained, so I figured they'd been washed away. It was spooky and creepy, and I would just like to know what it is. Hate to say, but I do wish I had hit the thing. I'm willing to speak with you about it. Haven't told anybody but my mother, so.
Wow.
I thought that was a pretty... profound in many ways, you know, and I'm working on getting down better details with this person, and I'll be posting it either probably posted on my blog, I think, because it's been let go a little, but a monkey on roller skates. Now, I'm still not sure.
Yeah.
I'm trying to... what it was after reading that, and I'm trying to get a better description of the face because he said he had a really good look at it, but I didn't feel I got a really good description from that.
Uh-huh.
But so,
the stature was smaller, though? Like
a 7 or 8 year old kid? Is that what he said?
That's what he said the first time. Okay. Yeah. And so that would be, you know, maybe about 4 feet tall.
Sure.
Wow. Okay.
Something like that. And that's another reason I'm interested, because I have had people report shorter ones.
Mm.
You know, again, it doesn't always happen. I did have one person. In the land between the lakes, leaving a campground, see a tall, like a 6 foot tall one with two younger pups crossing a road as he left this very remote campground. And it, outside of Lake Geneva, Wisconsin, a man and his daughter both saw a short one about that same height crossing the road. And if you think about it, if they are You know, the ones that look just like outsized timber wolves, if they're natural creatures, they have to breed. They have to have pups. And, sure. You know, there should be different sizes of them walking around if they're a natural creature. Mm-hmm. So that makes sense to me. But the fact that he likened it to a Halloween decoration, I think he's probably meaning that the face was pretty scary, you know, and he mentioned fangs, I think.
So
I'm working on getting a better description, but I'm sure glad that he sent this in, because the monkey on roller skates makes me think of the Bigfoot with a smooth gliding stride.
Right. You know? Yeah. Like it was very graceful and not bobbing up and down or whatever.
Like he's moonwalking in reverse.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. That's a great way to put it. And in this case too, the one thing that stopped me was the narrow waist, but if it's a juvenile Bigfoot, it really could have a narrow waist.
Sure.
You know, and I've had several dogman sightings right around that area north of Madison, more than several, actually. And not so many Bigfoot, but they get around to the same places, and it wouldn't surprise me, you know, if it was one. Or it was a smaller juvenile dogman, too. Huh. So.
Mm-hmm. Now, I've heard that in my many years of reading through different research and different opinions of researchers, but somebody, and I can't remember who the researcher is to attribute it to, but they claim that dogmen stay pretty exclusively near running bodies of water, like streams and lakes and ponds, and like they don't ever stray far from waterways. Have you found that correlation as well?
Well, I think I'm probably one of the people that has said that. Okay. It's just that I noticed very, very early on that I started a habit of looking at a map whenever I got a report and mm-hmm. seeing what was around there. And there would almost always be a river or handy lakes nearby.
Yeah.
And I also noticed that, and this is still true today, that there are many more reports east of the Mississippi than there are west. And, east of the Mississippi is a much better watered region of the United States than is our western states, you know,
that's
where
true,
we've got deserts and dry areas.
Mm-hmm.
So, and also there are concentrations of sightings all around the Great Lakes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I think in general that probably does hold true.
So are they not migratory then?
I still think they could be migratory, you know, and again, I look at the map of the United States and places where they're concentrated, and around the Great Lakes is the great bulk. But then there are sort of like spikes reaching down. There's one that goes down through Oklahoma, down into Texas. There's another one that goes down through Indiana and then down into Kentucky and over to Georgia, down into Florida. And then there's another one that continues through Ohio and Pennsylvania, big time dogman sighting states, and Bigfoot, both of them.
Wow.
And that's heading up toward the Northeast, you know, toward Maine and New York State, where we also have lots of sightings. But it seems like there are these big spurs where they find convenient corridors for one reason or another, you know. And I've often postulated, well, They're mammals that rely on a lot of protein for subsistence. If you just take into account how often they're seen carrying around, especially dogman, even going after roadkill, and mm-hmm. both of them going after deer, and you know you need water to digest protein.
Right.
And just in general, that's also where the prey goes, you know, everything goes to the water hole to drink, just like in Africa.
Sure.
So it makes a lot of sense to me that they would seek out those types.
Well, and that's kind of, you know, I would think that, you know, knowing how, you know, it is up here, you know, the deer are migratory, you know, they go a little south, you know, they try to stay out of the snow belt. And I've had elk die in my driveway, you know, so I know they're there, you know, and I know, however, I know that the coyotes are still there during the hard winter, you know, so.
Yeah.
you know, they, as you said, they need a lot of protein in their diet. So it would make sense that they would follow the herds. But once again, as I said, coyotes might be migratory, but they really up here, they're not. So, you know, it may be one of those things that, you know, sometimes they do, sometimes they don't, depending on how the season was and how they were able to fatten up during the summer, you know. So that's the way I was thinking, at least.
Right. And, well, coyotes, you know, I mean, they may not be strictly migratory in the thoughts of something that goes down south and then comes back or whatever, but there have been science articles lately about, or zoological studies done on them, because they're generally moving more and more eastward and mating with wolves and coming up with these kind of super coyotes.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And they call them coy wolves.
Right, right, right.
Yeah. And they're a lot less afraid of people than the timber wolves are. And, you know, can be considered more, I think they're considered more dangerous than just the regular coyotes, especially when they have their pack behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So...
Now, in terms of the dogmen, I think with Bigfoot, it's pretty well regarded that they're, and I think Don called it right, an opportunivore.
Yeah, an opportunivore.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, that's a great term.
And I like that too. Yeah, it was pretty dead on. But would you say that the dogmen is much more carnivore and not so much an omnivore?
Well, just in terms of what most people have observed it eating, you know, mm-hmm. and I guess that, you know, I've read that it's surprising that wolves will actually eat a lot more plant material than most people would think. You know, they'll eat grass in certain occasions, and they'll eat certain berries and things like that.
Oh, okay.
They're not as much of an omnivore as, say, a bear, but they do eat more plant material than people realize. But, you know, I'm really interested in the Bigfoot's diet, because that seems so varied. And I've read several accounts of them standing in marshes where there are cattails,
right.
And pulling up the cattails and then taking the roots and actually laying them in a neat pile and stacking them up to take with them, or their seed, carrying them. Right. You know, so I think if there could be a real study done of all their diets, it would probably be fascinating. I think they probably both catch turkeys and things like that, too.
Sure. Oh, we got bunches of those up in my house, too. Oh, my goodness. Why'd the turkey cross the road? To tick me off.
To go to Don's house.
They don't give much pass there.
Yeah. Wow. You don't want to hit one with your car, either, because the way they are, they hit the car low, mm-hmm. and inflict the most damage, and, mm-hmm. and then can bounce up on the hood and come through your windshield and get you. You know,
and they're dumb enough to do it.
Yeah.
Plus, I wouldn't want to hit one. They're pretty cool. You know, they're pretty cool animals.
Yeah, they are. And I'm surprised at how tame they seem to be. I mean, you hear about these turkey hunters going out in the woods and, you know, and going for hours and hiking and looking, and it's like, well, yeah, but they're in the yard over here eating stuff all day long.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah, my husband is a real outdoorsman hunter, turkey and deer and everything. Uh-huh. And we would have huge herds in our backyard, 20 deer, you know, 25 turkeys. And then he'd go deer and turkey hunting and never see one.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep. And he felt they were taunting him.
Well, they can read the calendar. They know when it's open season.
Yeah. That's true. They somehow sense it. Yep. I swear. Yeah. You know, I really do. And by the way, I'm feeling kind of bad about, I don't want anybody to get the impression from that letter that I was reading from that I approve of trying to run down animals in any way or sense. Just because this guy, he was a teenager, I think, and he was acting scared. He didn't know what else to do, and he was hoping to get some answer as to what the thing was. Not that I condone it, but I just wanted to make sure that was clear.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Absolutely, and we agree. I mean, it's just never a good idea to run down animals at all, but, you know, I'm sure that in his mind it was like, how am I ever going to make people believe this?
Yeah.
You know, and so, you know, you hear the old saying in the Bigfoot community as well. It's like, you got to produce a body. You got to produce a body. Well, I'm not a real big advocate of that either, but some people are.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there are other ways to do it. So,
yeah, I agree as well. So, Were there any other cases that kind of jump out in your mind as being quite fascinating?
Well, I don't know if we covered any of the ones in the Monsters Among Us book when I was here last time, but I have to say that there are a couple in that one that people very often bring up as being quite striking and unusual. And my next book that's coming up that will be out probably now, they're predicting next summer, because it just, you know, takes a lot of work to,
sure,
to for these publishers that are larger to get a book through and do everything that they do to make them the best they can be.
Mm-hmm.
But Monsters, that I was just going to say, that book is going to be much more on the way outside. But this one, I think the story that people bring up the most is probably the Northern Illinois Church Wolf Lady.
Church Wolf Lady.
Church Wolf Lady, which sounds weird, and it really was scary. This happened probably about, I'm going to guess, 10, 12 years ago, something like that. And the couple reported it to me just while I was taking or picking out stories for this particular book.
Mm-hmm.
But the Church Lady Monster is the actual title of it. And it was told to me by this very nice, down-to-earth, middle-aged couple. The husband was former military. The wife was a housewife. They were very devoted Christian people, according by their own description. And they went to a church in Northern Illinois, very devout churchgoers, had two children. And they went to kind of a small church with an older congregation, and the pews were all arranged in a U shape, so that if you were sitting in the front pew, you were kind of looking directly across at the other person in the pew. And they were sitting there one day and listening to the sermon, and it was there was a woman that came in after the service started and sat down sort of across from them, and they said they didn't know her really well. She was new.
Mm-hmm.
And she was dressed kind of nondescriptly. She had dark hair, you know, kind of a dark skirt on, light color, you know, nothing you would really remember as striking you. But they said she seemed nervous, and they noticed that she was kind of twitching every once in a while. Mm-hmm. And were kind of wondering if, you know, if it was something they should offer to help with or whatever. So the minister finished his service and was just stepping down from the altar area to take part in their song portion of the service. And just as he stood up and started to walk down, this woman stood up, let out a blood-curdling scream. And most people in the congregation, this couple said, had their hymnals open, and they were, you know, trying to find where they were going to be singing from. And so they kind of missed a lot of it. That and the fact of the U-shapes also blocked them out from a certain large portion of the church. So not everybody saw what happened next. Mm. She let out this scream, and within like the twinkling of an eye, she became the form of a gray-furred wolf.
Oh, my.
Oh, my God.
And, yeah, and bigger and no clothing, you know, just like a wolf would be, you know, just the fur.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And just as that happened, the pastor was passing by. He held his Bible out at the creature. And because it was the time, it was that time, I think the ushers were either getting the collection plates out or something, but they happened to be up there. And they all grabbed her at once and kind of wrestled this thing. It wasn't like they were grabbing the woman. They were grabbing this thing, wrestled it down onto the pew, and immediately she transformed back into this woman.
That's crazy.
And, oh, wow. this family is sitting there horrified.
Yeah.
And they watched as the ushers kind of led her out through the back, and they didn't see her again. She stayed the woman shape, and they said they didn't know where she went, and they weren't able to access the usual video of the sermon that was taken for shut-ins and that sort of thing. They wanted to.
Yeah.
And they said people were kind of going, well, what was that? What was that? But not everybody had a good look because it happened and was over so fast that they didn't. But the couple, you know, the couple's daughter, they tried to tell her that it was just some kind of, I don't know, they made up some kind of real superficial thing about it. And the daughter said, do you think I'm stupid? Do you think I'm blind? I didn't see that.
Oh, my God. And
because this was such an unusual story, I not only met with them three separate times in person. Once I took my husband along for my truthometer. He's real good at that. Uh-huh. And never did they change in their story. Never did they waver in what they wanted to say. They didn't want their names known. They didn't want any publicity from it. They just wanted people to know. And the church itself, and they gave me a lot of details, incidental details, as they were telling me things. And I wrote them all down. And in this day of the internet, you can check things out pretty easily. Every single thing they told me checked out.
Wow.
The church, I found out that the church was indeed at the place where they said it was in this small town, but had since been it's no longer a church. It became part of another building. So you wouldn't find it if you went there. But they said they moved away, and it was an older congregation that sort of, you know, they were kind of slowly passing away too, and church population had dwindled within a couple of years to just, you know, small enough that it didn't exist anymore. But everything I checked out was great. I had them sign an affidavit saying, to the best of their knowledge, everything they were telling me was true and exactly as they told it, and they happily did that. Wow. The husband drew a sketch. Mm-hmm. Of what this thing looked like, which I have in the book.
Oh, phenomenal. So
I'd say it's really hard to top that one.
No, that's about as far out there as you can get, but amazing story, and I believe that anything is possible. So
absolutely.
Thank you so much for being with us tonight, Linda. I just can't thank you enough. It's always such a rare pleasure to have this opportunity to have you on the show, and I hope you'll come back again sometime.
I would love to. I'd be very happy to. And if anybody has a story they want to report, or you're curious about my book titles, or want to read a lot of other, I've been posting quite a few from Michigan that haven't been in any books or elsewhere. Just lindagodfrey.com will get you the keys to everything. So there's an about page and all sorts of things. And if you're curious about the church lady story, that's in Monsters Among Us.
Okay.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, well, that wraps it up for us tonight. Be good, be kind, be nice, and we'll see you tomorrow night. Good night.
Sports betting is sweeping across the country faster than the coronavirus, and Wagering Week is your antidote. I'm Tom Martin, and I'm a veteran sports analyst and respected sports handicapper who helped build ESPN's brand. I've been recognized and awarded by Pro Football Weekly and Gaming Today magazine as the honest handicapper. Let the other guys give you the same old boring sports talk with the same tired storylines. We'll give it to you straight here every Friday on Wagering Week. Don't gamble with other podcasts. Let Sports Garden Network's Wagering Week help your bottom line.